And now, your Disneyland host, Walt Disney.
To most of us, the early days of California mean the time when this flag flew over the California Republic before its admission into the United States in 1850. And we think of Sutter's Mill near Sacramento, where gold was discovered back in 1849. But a full half century before the exciting days of the gold rush, California was the sunny land of the Spanish Dons. It was a romantic period of leisurely and gracious living, but it was a lawless period too. A time when California's isolation from the forces of law and order in the rest of the world was an open invitation to violence and banditry. Stories are told of a legendary hero who lived in those outlaw days. A dashing young man who appeared as a gay bon vivant by day, but who wore this by night to ride the countryside as the champion of justice and protector of the oppressed. Hated and feared by those he opposed, honored and respected by those he defended, he was known as Zorro. And you are about to see one of his exciting adventures now.
Out of the night, when the full moon is bright, comes a horseman known as Zorro. This bold renegade carves a Z with his blade, a Z that stands for Zorro. Zorro, the fox, so cunning and free. Zorro, who makes the sign of the Z.
Welcome to FW Presents, the anthology series of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, and another installment for the network Zorro Month. I'm your host, Chris Franklin, and joining me today to discuss Disney's 1957 through 59 television series Zorro, starring Guy Williams, are two fellow network all-stars. First up is my co-host on Batman Nightcast, the horseman known as Ryan Daly.
Buenas noches, caballero.
And last but not least, it is one of the co-founders of the network, the bold renegade who carves a hot with his blade, the irredeemable Shag.
Hola, amiga. Notice that had the feminine article.
I noticed that.
I was going to say.
Did you do that on purpose? Okay.
Maybe.
Our Spanish fluency is not to be questioned.
It was a dig on purpose, people. Jeez.
Your high school Spanish teacher is wagging her finger at you somewhere.
3 years of it.
3 years. Oh, wow. Okay. I did two. Okay, guys. So like I said, we're here to talk about the Disney television series Zorro, starring Guy Williams. We've covered other aspects of Zorro from the books to the comics to the 1940 Tyrone Power film, but this is the television series Zorro that some of us probably saw in reruns as kids and other people are discovering for the first time on Disney Plus. But so what is your all's personal history with this series, Ryan?
Up until about a month, maybe 2 months ago, when we kind of started forming this idea of doing Zorro Month, I didn't think I had ever heard of this. It wasn't until I watched the kind of what we're going to be talking about later, the movie version of the Zorro series, which was collected as The Sign of Zorro. When I watched it on Disney Plus, it kind of sparked this memory that one of my earliest memories of Zorro and kind of getting an idea of the visual cue for the character would have been seeing a black and white version of Zorro on TV. And I think it was probably a rerun of one of these episodes, possibly the movie version. I don't think it was the Tyrone Power version. I think it was probably Guy Williams. There was something about it, just as soon as I saw him again, I was like, this is familiar. This is like opening up some recessed chamber in the back of my mind that I had long forgotten about. So I think this was probably – I mean, I've said before, I don't really remember when I first met Zorro. It felt like he was always there. But certainly I had a visual idea of who the character was and what he looked like long before I saw the Antonio Banderas movie, which came out when I was younger. So I think I saw at least one episode of this when I was a kid. But except yeah, now I mean, and that was probably it. So my history with the series is extremely limited now, basically just in the episodes that were compiled into the movie that we're going to discuss.
Okay. What about you, Shag?
Well, I just want to point out, you mentioned reruns. I think Rob's old enough to have seen this thing first run. But anyway, for me, I already mentioned a little bit of this on the comic book episode. However, my first exposure to Zorro was Zorro the Gay Blade, which I still love with the nostalgic goggles on tremendously. So all within the matter of a few months, I watched Zorro the Gay Blade, the animated series, the New Adventures of Zorro, you know, the Filmation one. Mm-hmm. And then right about the same time, I discovered this show in reruns. And I was all in on Zorro, man. I fell head over whip for Zorro in the backyard playing it. And this would come on in the afternoons after school. It was kind of in the same block as the George Reeves Adventures of Superman show. And I don't know whether it was actually the same channel or whether it was different channels, but either way, it was like I would get to watch both after school. And it was just so exciting for me. And you're going to have to – maybe this is diving in further ahead than I should, but my memory is watching the show in color. And I know that if you go out to YouTube, you can find them in black and white and you can find them in color. What's the deal there with that?
They were colorized in, I think, 1992 and aired on the Disney Channel from then on in color. So
in 92?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Then my brain just created colorized versions when they weren't really there then. How funny. Okay. But so, yeah, I have a lot of passion for this run of Zorro, and I absolutely love it. And it's near and dear to my heart, as we'll get into more in a bit.
Cool. Well, my story is a little similar. You know, I don't really know exactly when I first met Zorro either, because my dad's like huge into Westerns. He was huge into Lone Ranger, which I've talked about on the network before, but he's also big into Zorro. But I think the first time that I really followed a Zorro series was that Filmation show that you're talking about, Shag, which was, you know, stripped. It was like the Tarzan Lone Ranger Zorro Adventure Hour. On CBS, and he had a sidekick named Amigo on there, which I thought was in every version of Zorro. I didn't know they just made it up for that. But
so I'm going to interrupt you for just a second. Think this through. Then it was Zorro and Amigo, so that would translate nowadays as Fox and Friends.
Oh, jeez. Mm. Oh,
yeah, I know, right? It's disturbing.
Oh wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, I didn't get to the Guy Williams series until a little bit later, because in 1983, and we'll get to this, CBS briefly ran a series called Zorro and Son.
And
that starred an actor named Henry Darrow, who was also the voice of Zorro on the Filmation cartoon. And he would go on to be in a later Zorro series as well. And we'll get to that briefly. We'll touch on those things briefly, but we'll touch on that later. But in 1984, our town finally got basic cable, we got cable and we got the Disney Channel, which I think the Disney Channel had just started maybe a year or so before. So they were running every old Disney thing they could find on the Disney Channel because they didn't have any new material. I mean, they were running, you know, Mouseketeers, they were running Walt Disney Presents, Wonderful World of Disney. And they were running Zorro. And like you, I just went nuts. I thought, you know, this was so much better than the Filmation show. And, I just loved it. You know, I got, you know, a sword and a black trash bag and ran around the yard, you know, at Zorro and tried to, you know, carve, a Z into things with a plastic blade. Doesn't really work. so yeah, I mean, you know, and the show had a serial nature. So, you know, one episode build on the one before. And that, I mean, that kept me engaged and so it hooked me. So just general guys, you know, looking at this, Ryan's got limited exposure, but coming in this fresh, Ryan. So what, in general, what is the appeal of this version of Zorro to you? What did you take from it from what you've seen so far?
Hang on, I'm still. I threw up at the Zorro and Amigo thing that Shag revealed. I mean, the general appeal. I mean, well, I mean, once we've said it, I was like, yeah, I like Zorro and I want to see more of him, so I bought right into this one. And initially, I mean, this is just a fun, spirited adventure serial. I mean, it's just a classical swashbuckling story, which is something that is near and dear to my heart. That is like that appeals to the part of me that never grew up. It's the thing, the quality that I most love about Star Wars is the swashbuckling nature of Luke Skywalker and Princess Leia swinging across a chasm, or you know, like the space pirate version of them, like fighting in Jabba's sail barge. That part of me that I've always loved. So you give a guy a black costume and a cape and put a sword in his hand and he starts dueling corrupt cops and things like that. I was like, yeah, I love this. So just like the adventure spirit, the music, the set design, the production, and we'll talk a little bit more, but like the cast, like the main characters are so expressive. They look like they were just perfectly, like, just came out of the pulps to play these roles. Yeah, more than anything, like, just like the simplest answer is just fun and a spirited adventure. The things that I said at first.
Okay, what about you, Shag?
Well, I'm going to struggle to say anything more than what Ryan just said. Basically, my notes had swashbuckling and fun and high adventure. I mean, it to me, it's part of it's the nostalgia goggles. I don't know. Part of it just feels like putting on a comfortable sweater or something. It's just this show is so much fun, and a lot of it. And again, we're going to talk about the cast. A lot of it comes down to the cast. They're exceptional. All the recurring characters, the little bit parts they bring in, everyone brings their A game for what essentially was a kid's show that was probably never going to be rerun, at least never that they planned. And it's an exceptionally well done, well put together show. There's a little bit of a formula to it, but not in a bad way. It's not like you see it all the time, but you know you're going to get the inn, you know you're the tavern, whatever you want to call it. You know you're going to get the hacienda. You know you're going to get different bits and pieces. You're going to get Garcia being a goof and all that, and that's okay because it works. It's not boring or repetitive. So,
mm-hmm. You know, it kind of comes down to because you know. Very early on that your protagonist is the smartest guy in the room, the most capable and talented guy in the room, but he also has a personal and a social conscience and a morality that he is fighting for justice and he's fighting for the good guy. And even though he's you know, fighting a system that is bigger than him, in a sense, the government and the people in power, but he's still capable, and he's just such a likable leading man.
Yeah, he is. I mean, and we'll talk about the cast more, but yeah, I mean, he is part of the magic that makes this thing work. And also, I guess I should mention too, you know, I mentioned the Superman George Reeves series, sure, earlier. In a lot of ways, there's a lot of that in here. I mean, it's basically a superhero TV show in the Old West. And it works for that. I mean, it pings all those things that us nerds love, right? I mean, superheroes, secret identity, you know, the adventure, the Western. It's a complete win.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think you guys nailed it. And I hadn't really even thought about it, but just, you know, when you guys brought up the adventures of Superman and that, you know, cause George Reeves always was the, you know, no offense to the wonderful cast of the Daily Planet staff, but he was, you know, we were in on The Secret with him, and we were the only ones on that show that were in on The Secret. On Zorro, there were a few other characters that were, but still, just that feeling of, you know, we're rooting for this guy. We know he's going to do the right thing. And all the other elements you guys said, the production, the cast, I mean, that's the music. It's such a well crafted package, and it really holds up so well, you know, even now, I think, you know, and so, I mean, it just, you know, as a kid, I think I realized even then, okay, this is better than average. You know, this is way mm-hmm. better,
yeah.
Way better than an average TV production. And honestly, there's a Zorro series that came on when I was, you know, not too much older that we'll talk about later that pales to this for reasons. And despite having some good talent behind it, but it just doesn't quite capture that. This magic, but we'll jump into, you know, we'll do a little talk about, just the general history of how this show come about. How did Disney, launch this show? Well, you know, basically, you know, we've talked about on these shows before, you know, Zorro was created by Johnston McCulley. He had written several pulp adventures of Zorro, and he had even contributed to the Republic serials. You know, there was the Tyrone Power of Mark of Zorro film in 1940 after the 1920 Douglas Fairbanks film. So, you know, Zorro was definitely in the pop culture zeitgeist, and he still, there were, you know, still there were serials up until through the early 50s. But Macaulay had sold his interest in the character to a Hollywood agent named Mitchell Gertz, and it's actually his family who still owns Zorro Productions to this day. So they've managed to, with, you know, Macaulay's blessing, they, you know, took over control of Zorro, and they're the guys that are still behind it nowadays. And he, Gertz was able to sell Walt Disney on the idea of a TV show in 1952, but it took him 5 years to make it to the screen. Apparently, some networks were wanting him to make a pilot, and Walt Disney's like, I don't need to make you a pilot. You know, I'm freaking Walt Disney. I know how to make a TV show. and you know, he's like, I guess negotiations kind of didn't go anywhere for a while. And so, you know, but they eventually got around to it. And, you know, Westerns were huge on TV. I mean, they were humongous on TV in the early days of television. So it was kind of a no-brainer that a character like Zorro, even setting an early Western setting in old California, it's still, you know, more of a Western thing. Plus, Disney had just had a humongous hit with Davy Crockett. And so, you know, pop culture phenomenon like no other, every kid with a coonskin cap, you know. They actually got the director of the Davy Crockett features, Norman Foster, to helm the initial episodes of Zorro and to kind of help set the series up with the casting and things like that. And so they had decided that they wanted an unknown in the lead role. You know, usually, you know, not unusual for, you know, a television show to, you know, hire an unknown actor so you can, you know, probably to save yourself some ego trouble more than anything.
And get him cheaper.
And get him cheaper, exactly. So the usual casting call went out, and two of the main candidates that emerged in the lead were Britt LeMond and Armando Joseph Catalano. Ultimately, LeMond would be cast as Zorro's initial adversary, Captain Montesario, and 33-year-old Catalano would be Zorro under his stage name of Guy Williams. So Guy Williams was an Italian-American from New York, and he may have had some Spanish ancestry because apparently his Catalano name translates from Catalina, Spain. I read that, you know, I read it on IMDb, so take it with what you will, guys. It might not be true.
It's gotta be true.
It's gotta be true. He attended the Peekskill Military Academy, but he decided to pursue modeling and acting because he's, you know, an incredibly handsome dude, so why wouldn't you?
Damn, he is. I mean, seriously, the guy's like...
Yeah, he is.
Got a little man crush going on him.
Yeah, definitely. And he earned contracts at MGM and Universal at different times. He played mostly bit parts, but he was in films like The Day the Earth Stood Still and Bonzo Goes to College, which I think was, you know, a sequel to Bedtime for Bonzo with Ronald Reagan. Although I don't know if Ronald Reagan was in Bonzo Goes to College, but anyway. He, for genre fans, he has a pretty decent part in a cult classic film, I Was a Teenage Werewolf, which stars another young actor destined for Western stardom, and that would be Michael Landon, pre-Bonanza, pre-Little House on the Prairie. So Guy Williams was a smart dude because he took some fencing classes, feeling that that skill may come in handy in his acting ambitions. So, you know, 6'3", handsome, somewhat exotic-looking guy with fencing prowess, there's your Zorro. So.
Right.
But now that I've just had to do something I'm not very proud of, I've convinced my father that I'm a spineless weakling. But if I were to take open action as he wants to do, his life would be in danger. Now I'm free to act alone. You remember what I said this morning? If you're gonna clothe yourself in the skin of the lion, put on that of the fox. Well, from now on, I shall be Zorro, the fox.
So what do you guys think of Guy Williams' portrayal of Zorro? I've got a feeling I know what you're going to say, but let's get into it. What do you think, Ryan?
The Fox and Friends thing still.
You know, if you keep saying it, you're going to put it out there in the ether, and it's just going to become a thing. You got to stop manifesting it.
I was instantly, like, as soon as I turned it on and I'm watching this guy as Don Diego, as he's, like, doing his first fencing trip before he gets off the boat, I'm like, this guy, like, just magnetic. I mean, it, like, any kind of generic cliche term that you would use to describe somebody who is just, like, attractive, charismatic, I mean, I think he's just got all of that. He is, like, the perfect sort of central casting leading man. He's just got that. He pulls off the accent. He's got that, like, just the the suave sexual charisma. He just, I mean, for,
I think the term you're looking for is the word is Luke Dobbishness.
Luke might have a slightly better hair. I'm not sure. I don't know.
I mean, the only thing that it struck me much later on is that within like the movie version that they assemble from some of the early episodes, there isn't one central like love story going on to component. I was like, why aren't you playing into this guy and having him woo women, which is like the main part of the book, the original Zorro novel, is this love story. But I mean, Shag's man crush is well understood and well deserved. Like, this guy just, yeah, I mean, transport him anywhere, any time period, and he could just be the perfect, you know, man for a TV series, a superhero movie, like anything. This guy just, he was great for this role.
Well, I've already put my cards on the table for the most part, mm-hmm. but I will tell you, out of every iteration of Zorro I've seen, which probably, I mean, isn't as many as you might think. Like, I haven't seen some of the original movies and things like that, but as far as, you know, Antonio Banderas and George Hamilton and some of the various bits and pieces I've seen here, I mean, Guy Williams is Zorro to me. He is my Zorro, straight up. I mean, that voice, his voice is like silk, guys. I mean, I could listen to him read a phone book. The guy's amazing. And that smile, whether he's in the mask or just Guy Williams, Don Diego, he's got this incredibly just captivating smile. He could control the whole room with that thing. The guy's amazing. And I'm glad you mentioned the sword fighting, Ryan. Now, the other things I noticed too. Now, I wonder if this was him or stuntman, but there's a lot of horseback riding that goes on the show. It sure seems like that's him mounting horses at various times. Mm-hmm. And then there's the whip, working with the whips as well. So, I mean, the guy's just astonishing. So again, for me, he is my Zorro.
Yeah, I agree. That's what I had in my notes. He's my Zorro.
For me, it's neck and neck between him and older Anthony Hopkins from the Mark of the Mask of Zorro. You know.
Yeah. Well, you know, I got to say the first. I mean, I really love that Mask of Zorro movie, but the first opening part of that movie with. Because I'll be honest, when they cast Anthony Hopkins, I'm like, Anthony Hopkins. And then when they showed him as Zorro, you know, I'm like, oh, he totally won me over. Cause he looks like an older Douglas Fairbanks.
Yes, he does.
Is who Anthony Hopkins looks like. But he was great. But getting back to Guy Williams, and I can't help it because I love this series so much. I think of Anthony Hopkins as the older Guy Williams. Cause I think of, Guy Williams as Zorro, you know, cause, you know, he is Zorro. Like you said, he's got that big grin. He's got this devil may care approach to the role, which I mean, but he also can get, you know, when an injustice is put in front of him, he honestly sometimes has a hard time staying in his Don Diego character, which I like, you know, to the camera, he'll make a face like, ooh, I can't stand this, you know, which I mean, that's a nice bit of acting. And I mean, of course, the other actors, the other characters don't notice it, but it portrays that he's got this passion, you know, for doing what's right. And I think that really comes through. I mean, he's just a very passionate guy. And it is interesting, Ryan, that they didn't, I think they tried to stay away. I think later, I didn't go back and watch the whole series. We didn't have time, but, you know, some of the later episodes, he seems to have more of a recurring love interest at different times. And I think though, you know, it was probably one of those, ooh, icky girl type things because like,
well, it is Disney. Yeah.
It's Disney and they're selling this mostly to boys, you know, and I think they tried to keep it, you know, a little, not so much romance, in it, you know, so, you know, which, but yeah, I mean, he's, you know, the guy just oozes, you know, all the manliness that you can contain in a half hour black and white TV show. But, he's the whole deal. So Zorro's, you know, I mean, obviously Zorro's look is pretty basic. I mean, but we have seen variations on it. So what do you guys think of his look overall? What's, you know, do you, you know, is it a standout? Is it the standard for you? What do you think about it?
Well, I mean, it's no Bunny's Wigglesworth from Zorro the Gay Blade with the golden lame outfit. But I mean, that withstanding, then yeah, it looks great. I mean, it is, as you sort of said, it's sort of a stock standard version I actually think I like some of the Antonio Banderas costume a little bit better because there's some nice flares to it. Same thing even with George Hamilton's black version of the costume. But in general, it's absolutely great. It's serviceable. It's iconic. It's you know, when Alex Toth captures it perfectly in the comics, it looks great. So it's a win.
Yeah, I mean, for me, like the costume should be fairly minimal, and I think that's what they do with this one. I mean, for Zorro, it's more about the silhouette that he cuts. You just need like the all black with the cape, the hat, the mask. I actually joke, you know, with Max in the original novel, the mask is described as covering his entire face. And of course, once you start to put that on in the movie and on a TV show, of course, you need to see the actor's face. So they just made it the sort of, you know, bandito thing that goes across his eyes so that you can show more of the actor. But I think the costume is fun because it's instantly identifiable. It's one of those things that it's just don't mess with that costume. It's good as is. Yeah.
Yeah,
I got two things to add real quick, Chris. One, what is the mustache is so important. The specific cut of the mustache is critical, and they do it perfectly. But actually, one thing that and this goes back again. I keep leaning on Alex Toth's comics. Forgive me, but the comics were direct adaptations of the shows. I was reading a piece by Alex Toth, and he actually had a complaint about the costume, which was specifically that it was all shiny silken material. And he said, realistically, that someone who was running around at night, you know, trying not to be seen, would not be wearing a shiny silken version. He'd be wearing a matte version of the costume. And so he had that complaint. But I get why they did it. I mean, it's a TV show. You got to make it look snazzy.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that was just to capture, because if it didn't capture a little bit of light, especially on a black and white television show, he would just be a silhouette. Of course that makes sense. It's kind of like Ryan that brings up that, what Denny O'Neill wrote about Batman's costume and Death Strikes at Midnight in 3 about it being a matte, like gray and black that's in blue.
Synthetic
so.
Blues. Yeah. That reflects no light. He specifically points that out.
Yeah. So I like that. Yeah. That's cool. So one thing I noticed on his costume, I like the fact that it's pretty basic. I do like that, you know, I think the Antonio Banderas costume suits him. It suits his character more because it's got the filigree and stuff on his hat and things like that. And I like that. But I think for Guy Williams, this suit kind of suits him because I do like one thing that he's got on this is I've noticed his cape has armholes in it so he can like put his arms through his cape.
Yeah, it's like a jacket almost.
Yeah, it's almost like a jacket. So he can wear it like a jacket, or he can, you know, pull his arms back and it just works like a normal cape when he's running across the rooftops or riding Tornado. So it's a nice look.
No one must suspect that my father has summoned me home. We must find a way to deal with this tyrant. The direct approach? No, Bernardo. When dealing with a powerful enemy, we must play another game. You know the old proverb. When you cannot clothe yourself in the skin of the lion, put on that of the fox. I must convince the new comandante that I'm perfectly harmless. But how? Ah, an excellent idea. Instead of a man of action, I shall become a man of letters, an innocent scholar interested only in arts and sciences. Why, these books that I am taking to the mission preach, they will be my most prized possession. Well, as for these fencing medals and trophies, they are no longer part of my life. Throw them overboard.
I know we kind of touched on this when we talked about Guy Williams in general, but specifically, what do you guys think about his Don Diego portrayal, because that portrayal can kind of change from adaptation to adaptation.
Well, for me, of course, again, I'm in love with Guy Williams, so I'll accept it. It's perfectly fine. And I guess the comments I'm going to make are probably less about him and more about the script and the direction probably. But like as the series goes on, because I watched a handful of episodes and I would dip in like early, middle, late, that kind of thing. The series really got a much more relaxed feel as it went on. And there was a lot more like wink and a nod kind of stuff and a little bit lighter fare. And the Don Diego stories got a little, at least one particular one that stands on my mind, got a little campy and a little silly. I mean, it was a wedding episode. And they spent the whole time trying to prevent a wedding from happening. And it was kind of goofball, and Don Diego was doing kind of goofball stuff. So I think it comes down to the script. And again, early story, like the first season and maybe this first half of the second season, was spot on. Was great. I love that version of Don Diego. It's interesting. It is a little bit of a difference from the original I was reading about, that this version of Don Diego idolizes Zorro and wishes he could be, you know, as athletic and everything like that. Whereas apparently other versions had him just completely not being interested in any sort of action or violence in the Don Diego identity.
Yeah, I mean, that goes to the original story where he was, you know, like Clark Kent to the nth degree, like got like queasy at the sight of at the mention of violence and was sort of repulsed by the idea of like of anything. Like, and that was all part of his cover. This one is certainly still more of a man who is sociable and friendly and engaging and somebody that you would want to talk to and spend time with and still kind of, again, still at least what I've seen, like leaning into that kind of just charismatic, you know, leaning man, like the guy that everybody would want to be friends with and you know, who knows his reputation and uses his small sphere of influence for good in general like that. It's not such a leap to imagine him being Zorro, which probably is why Montesario was convinced of it so early on. Just as a little side rant, I went on IMDb to see pictures of Antonio Banderas's Zorro costume, and I fell down a rabbit hole. My God, Catherine Zeta-Jones was inhumanly beautiful back in
1990. Oh, my God. You ain't kidding. Jeez.
That movie made her career, without a doubt. Yes.
I think it was actually – it was the trailer for the movie Entrapment that showed that focused on one particular scene of her.
Oh, yeah. The laser beam. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. She's pretty stunning. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That's – yeah. Ooh, okay. I got distracted. I'm sorry. Yeah.
We all did.
I think, you know, one thing I liked – and I did read where Guy Williams said that – you know, he had to kind of change the portrayal of Diego from the way Tyrone Power had played it, which was similar to the way that Fairbanks had played it, as a complete fop, you know, the act, because that would be hard to sustain on a show. Kind of like, you know, George Reeves did not play Clark Kent the way that Kirk Allen had played him, because Kirk Allen played it similar to the way Christopher Reeve would later play it. You know, so, I mean, to, you know, you got to carry the show as the civilian character for the most part, because whenever the hero shows up, it costs money, you know, so they've got, so the budgets are, so the shows are almost always arranged to where, you know, the unmasked or, you know, the civilian character is carrying the bulk of the episode. So I think that was smart of Williams to kind of lean into making Diego more of a, like you said, Ryan, a likable guy. I mean, they do, you know, he is more interested in playing his guitar. He's a little more foppish, I think, in the earlier episodes, like you said, Shag. And I think he kind of, you know, he's a little more open about the fact that he thinks Montesario is a tyrant as the, you know, as we get toward the end of the Sign of Zorro and the end of the first half of the first season. But I think, you know, I think that was a smart move to not, cause I think if he was, that just, I just think you'd just be, you know, just waiting for him to become Zorro if he was that character all the time for, you know, 78 or 82 episodes, however you want to look at it. So I think it was a really smart move. And, you know, I do like when they would several times they, you know, he would have to pick up his, foil and sword and show that, you know, he was not a very good swordsman, but he sure tried, you know, and it was fun to watch Guy Williams, who is obviously a very good fencer, act like a total goofball with a sword, but still managed to defend himself. So that
he would do in those scenes, he would do this dramatic, like stomping thing with his leg as he was moving forward. It was hilarious. I loved it. And he'd be so enthusiastic. He'd be like, yes, I will help you, Garcia. We shall go together arm in arm.
Right.
He was a complete hot mess. It was wonderful.
Right.
He is the luckiest terrible swordsman in the world.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So a quick thing, I just got thinking about this, and you know, one of my other favorite sort of franchise properties is I shouldn't say favorite. One that I really like, that's fair. Lost in Space. I do love some Lost in Space, and it's interesting. Like, he was never as nearly as compelling on Lost in Space as he was on Zorro. It's not that he was bad or anything, but you know, Don was kind of the hero in that show, and the dad was just kind of there a lot of times. And maybe that's a fact of the script, but just there's something about his chemistry in this 58 or 57 to 61 era, whatever it is.
Yeah.
He was just amazing at that point.
Yeah. I don't think Lost in Space was exactly a good experience for Guy Williams. I've heard he basically got, the show was taken out from under him by Dr. Smith, the robot and a kid, basically. So, And I think they just, he was like the generic father figure on there. And they wasted Guy Williams on Lost in Space, I think. They really did. I mean, based on his Zorro, they totally wasted that guy. That's one reason why he retired after Lost in Space. He retired from acting, basically. I think because he was just kind of fed up, and he invested his money well, apparently. So good for him. So that's nice.
I was reading about how he didn't really particularly go on to, as you said, he kind of stepped out of acting, didn't go on to major. He never like broke into the movie market in a big way.
No.
And he ended up in, I think it was Argentina, spending a large chunk of his life doing movies there, if I remember, doing stuff in Argentina towards the end of his life. Yeah. But, the guy, he could have been a major Hollywood star. I think he really had the capacity, the ability to do it. And it's just a shame he never broke through.
Yeah, apparently there's a Sinbad movie that he was in where he was an Italian-made Sinbad movie, which I'm going to have to find because, I'm sure it's not like Ray Harryhausen level of a Sinbad movie, but still, it's probably worth checking out. It's got Guy Williams in it.
Wow.
He was in some other kind of sword and sandal type flick too. So, as we're all in the Guy Williams fan club now, we'll have to go see if we can find those movies and watch them. So.
I was going to suggest I'll get jackets, but let's get capes instead. It'll be the capes. Guy Williams fan club. New Patreon reward, folks.
Well, I've already named, our Skype chat is called the Foxy Guys, so we could just call ourselves that, I told Cindy that. She's like, you did not. I'm like, yeah, I did. But anyway.
you also want to be something you are not. Very well. You shall play the fool. You want to pretend you cannot hear? Even better. You shall be the eyes and ears behind my back. From now on, you not only cannot speak, you hear nothing.
Bravo, Bernardo.
So, but there were other people on the show besides Guy Williams. I don't know if you guys noticed them because, it's hard to pay attention to anybody else when Guy Williams is on the screen. But there were other characters on the show, including Gene Sheldon, who played Bernardo, who was Zorro and Diego's faithful assistant. And, he brought some nice comedy bits to the show. What did you guys think of Gene Sheldon and the character of Bernardo? Ryan?
What an expressive face. I mean, for being a character who has to play, for having to play a mute, and then pretending to be a deaf mute for as part of his character and to help Zorro. When you can't communicate verbally with dialogue, you have to rely on every other feature that you have. And his face just does so much, selling things from comedy to dramatic tension to just like an earnest sincerity. Yeah, he's great. As much as Guy Williams draws your attention in, I could just watch like Bernardo do stuff for like 5 minutes at a time. He was just such a fun guy to like watch and look at what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
He's an absolute hoot. He's great. And just one last thing I'll say, because basically my thoughts echo Ryan's, is with the comedic elements and that haircut, I couldn't help but wonder, is he like the brother of Larry from the Three Stooges? Is kind of where I was going.
Yeah, he does kind of got that vibe about him. Yeah, he did.
Not in a bad way, though. No, I mean, and actually, Ryan's insight went a lot deeper than I think mine would have. The expression thing hadn't really occurred to me, Ryan, and that's a great point. I mean, the guy's great.
Yeah, and it's like, you instantly, if that character under another actor could have been annoying. I mean, honestly, if they hadn't played him just right, but he strikes that balance of just he's sweet and, he's got this, he's, and they don't, they Diego treats him like almost like an equal partner in a lot of ways,
Yeah.
And they pick on each other and have fun. You know, they're having fun. You get the idea that there's I saw a picture of Guy Williams and Gene Sheldon, like in costume, staring at the camera, sticking their tongues out at the camera, which was cute.
Aw, that's great.
Well, yeah. Right from the beginning, you fall in love with this guy because, you know, when Diego decides he has to go undercover in order to pull this thing off, and he has to basically shed every part of the real Diego and in order to pass off as somebody that you would never suspect would be Zorro, part of that includes getting rid of all of these fancy fencing trophies that he won and all of these accolades that he did back in Europe. So he tells Bernardo, throw these overboard, throw them off the ship, let them bury the sea. And Bernardo balks at the idea. He doesn't want to do it. He stops at the side and he's like, it's like, these are your trophy. These are your awards. You won these. You earned them. And Diego has to say, no, this is too important. Get rid of them. But the fact that meant something to Bernardo, that he was hesitant to do that, that's just like, oh, man, that is the faithful, loyal sidekick that you want, the servant that you want. That's, you know, that's everything that you love about Alfred and these type of characters.
He was really great in that scene. You're absolutely right. And something else that just occurred to me too is as you watch the show, you know, one of the things is Don Diego and Bernardo have a their own sign language, if they will, so they can communicate. And sometimes as you watch an episode, the amount of information that Bernardo is able to communicate with a hand gesture is, and I realize it's to move the plot forward, but it's almost on the level of Timmy and Lassie at some point where it's just like, what's that, Bernardo? Tim, you know, Johnny's trapped in the well. Let's go. Like, how did he get that from that? No way.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, sometimes they make huge leaps of in logic that he's. But, you know, I mean, I don't know. It's kind of like I feel like they've been together and so long, because later on we find out that, you know, there's somebody that in an episode, I think that you and I watched, Shag, that has a very famous guest star. Somebody recognizes Bernardo and him and Diego were tight way back in when he was in Spain. So they go back pretty far. So I guess as soon as Diego got to Spain, him and Bernardo became friends and he became his, you know, valet or whatever you want to call it. So yeah, it's almost like they're an old married couple. Cause you know, Cindy can make a face at me and I know exactly what she's saying, you know, and you know,
I guess that's true.
So we can kind of almost read each other's minds, but yeah, it is this strange, sign language. Yeah, I really like, Bernardo, the character. And I guess he was a character in the novel, wasn't he? Was he in the original novel?
He was named in the novel, but he had a tiny sliver of a part in the original novel. I think the character was really expanded, I think, in the Douglas Fairbanks movie. Okay. That came out, because I think it was an invention. Basically, they need Zorro to talk to somebody. Right. I mean, he needs somebody to play off of, just as a way of conveying exposition to the audience, because you don't have the narrator or the inner monologue that you might get from a novel. So basically, the movies and the TV show created a sidekick for Zorro. He didn't have that in the original story by Johnston McCauley. Now, maybe after the movie came out, because McCauley kept on writing more Zorro stories and novels after that, maybe the character became something. But in the original source, no. He was just a mute servant that Diego has who stands in front of his door at one point so that people can't go in to wake up Diego, because really he's sneaking off as Zorro. That's it. That's his tiny little part.
Okay. So just to be super nitpicky, you say he was invented in the first Zorro movie in 1920.
Well, he was named in the book. There was a character called Bernardo.
No. Just let me finish my joke. Shut up. You say that his part was enhanced in the 1920 movie so that Zorro had someone to talk to. It was a silent movie, dude. Who's he talking to? All right, my joke's
fair enough. Touché.
Nice.
Seriously, I don't actually. Maybe he didn't become a thing until the Tyrone Power movie. Then, I honestly don't know if it was the Douglas Fairbanks one or the Tyrone Power movie.
But it's fair to say the enhanced part was before this TV series came about.
Then. Yes,
so that's fair. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I do like how they, you know, the whole bit about him acting like he's deaf. It comes in handy, and you know, it makes for some some fun moments. And plus, I mean, you know. We even get in the Sign of Zorro, we even get that Bernardo gets to put the Zorro costume on and help save Diego's identity. And no offense to Alan Napier, but he pulls off the Zorro costume better than Alfred did on the Batman TV show. So I'll give him
That's fair. That's fair. Guy can't play guitar to save his life, though.
No, he can't.
Iron Sergeant?
See.
Can hardly keep your eyes open, eh?
See.
Sleep well, my sergeant.
Gracias, Comandante. Comandante?
Sergeant Garcia, do you know the penalty for sleeping while on duty?
Si, Comandante, it is unforgivable.
You should be hung, should you not?
Si, Comandante. But perhaps the cause of justice would be better served if I were banished to a distant place, say the Presidio at Monterrey.
Where the wines are even better than here, huh? Oh, no, my stupid one. You shall not escape so easily this time.
So, some humor bits from Bernardo actually sometimes flow over to another character who is there, definitely there to pepper in some humor, and that would be Sergeant Garcia, played by Henry Calvin. I think he's one of the first, I think a lot of people think of Guy Williams, and then they instantly go, the next guy you think of a lot of times is Sergeant Garcia from this show. So what did you guys think of him?
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, this guy is the template for the, you know, kind of moron, second in charge guard kind of thing that just messes up all the time. But you can't help but love him. I mean, I don't know whether he's the first character actor to ever play that type of role, but by golly, he is like the gold standard for it. He's fantastic. I mean, he is. You can't help but laugh every time he's in a scene. He's absolutely the doofball. There's episodes where later on he becomes in charge of the Pueblo. Or the Presidio, whatever, and it's hard to believe that they put him in charge because he's so like inept. But the actor is so much fun to watch. And when we were reading the comics, they were doing some likenesses. And Ryan, I'm going to steal your quote there, but you could even see in the comics his flop sweat is what you described it as. I mean, you just it's perfect. This guy's so iconic, even in comic book form, you can't help but immediately recognize him.
Yeah, I mean, as expressive as the Bernardo actor was. I mean, this guy just – I mean, the way he – like when he smiles at the end, when he gets like a promotion or something like that, to like everything, it's just – he's got this character that you can look at him and you can see him being a goofball. You can see him being dumb. You can see him being angry. You can see him laughing uproariously, all without his face changing. You can just see all of these kind of like qualities in this guy because of his look. It's really, really impressive.
I also loved how like anybody could bribe him with a drink. It was always about, you know, leaning into the things he liked, and he'd be so gracious and loving that. And he had this one quirk that is hilarious, which cracks me up, which is whenever Don Diego would trick Garcia into doing something, Garcia would always claim it was his idea. And that was a reoccurring gag through a whole bunch of episodes where he always says, well, you know, I'm glad I thought of that. Is kind of I think that's the quote. Like, I'm glad I thought of that. Right? I'm sure glad that came up or whatever. Either way, every time he always claimed credit for it, which was hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys nailed it. He's just the character actually, you know, I like the fact that, you know, especially in the early story with Captain Montessario, he's asked to do some things that he doesn't want to do. And he actually apologizes, you know, for some of the things he's doing while he's doing them. And you just, you just feel like it's like you feel sorry for the guy. He really is just, you know, carrying out orders. And he's just so... Yeah, he's so lovable, but so just, you know, honestly just dumb that he can't, you know, he's so easily led from one person to the other. I mean, literally, he can, you know, if Montessario tells him to do something and has this plan, and then Diego figures out what it is, and Diego can steer him away from that plan to following him. I mean, he's easily led around, especially if you get him some wine or, you know, or you offer him some money or something. So yeah, he's just a lot of fun. And between him and Bernardo, they've got this kind of, they've got some scenes together throughout the series, and they've got this kind of Laurel and Hardy thing going. And they actually, I'm pretty sure they played they were both in the Disney version of Babes in Toyland, which was, you know, of course, another version had Laurel and Hardy in it. So, you know, Disney knew what they had with those guys. So, yeah, so they're a whole lot of fun. They're a whole lot.
Out of all the characters, of all the reoccurring characters, that is, I think Garcia is probably the most Disney-like. Like, his style of goofball, you know, bad guy, but the kind of bad guy you don't really have to worry about that much. I mean, he feels like a very typical Disney character to me.
Yeah, yeah. He is almost like a live-action cartoon in a lot of ways.
I'm just thinking like that. Like, I keep going back to, like, the characters from, like, the Disney animated Robin Hood movie, and, like, between the Sheriff of Nottingham and his, like, two, like, it, like, the Nutley and, like, the little vulture, like, main, like, servants that he has. Like, that would be something like that. Gonzalez or Garcia is somewhere between there.
Yeah, yeah, I definitely think that's dead on, yeah.
Strange. So strange. It is almost as if I had known you. You seem so much like someone I know. I'm a foolish old man with foolish dreams. So often have I dreamed that my son would come back from Spain and he would be like you. Now that you're so close, it is so much like my dreams. I feel almost that I could pull aside the mask. There will be the face of my son, Diego. I would not pull away the mask. I would not have the courage. An old man must cling to his dreams. As desperately as he clings to life.
You will have many years left, my father, to live and dream.
Another regular on the show was Diego's father, Don Alejandro. He was played by George J. Lewis, who was actually no stranger to Zorro. He had appeared in the serials Zorro's Black Whip, which is a personal favorite of my dad's, and it features a female descendant of Zorro in that one. They don't reveal that there's this Black Whip, and at the end you find out, oh no, the Black Whip's not the guy, it's the lady. So the costume was apparently not very form-fitting. he was also in Zorro's Ghost, which featured future Lone Ranger Clayton Moore as Zorro in that one. So, but he played Don Alejandro here on the series. What did you guys think of the character of Alejandro and George J. Lewis as the character?
It's possible that I just didn't see the right episodes, but this guy is just barely there for me. It's not anything bad. I mean, there's nothing in his portrayal that's bad, but there's just nothing that stands out. I mean, he's just quietly there in the early episodes. He's critical of his son a little bit, and then you move on. And the later episodes, once he's in on the secret, there's a lot, again, the wink and the nod, sort of like, oh, let's go do some Zorro stuff. And the dad's like, ha ha ha. But other than that, I didn't feel like there was a lot there. And again, it's not meant to be mean. I don't know. Did you see more in his portrayal than maybe I did?
Well, I mean, I know what happens later on, but I get, you know, from the early episodes, yeah, he's so harsh on Diego. I mean, he just comes out and says, I'm not proud of you, basically, you know. I mean, that's pretty harsh, you know. He obviously still loves his son, but yeah, he's definitely pretty vocal about the fact that he does not like this Diego that came back from Spain. You know, he, and actually he's the engine that gets this whole story going, because he sends for Diego to come back because of Montessario and the oppression. And when he shows up and, you know, he's more interested in just, you know, playing his guitar and catching up on his reading than, you know, fighting against this tyranny. Well, he's pretty disgusted with him. And there's this, you know, great part in that's in the Sign of Zorro movie where, he is injured. Alejandro is injured trying to free some prisoners from the Cuatrell, and Zorro, you know, saves him. But he actually says, you know, I just wish my son could be more like you, or, you know, and he's like, I'd like to remove the mask, but I couldn't because I won't see my son's face. And, you know, I mean, it's really, you know, it's got to be a gut punch to Diego, because he just wants to say, hey, I'm Zorro. And I don't remember exactly, I haven't seen that episode where he finds out, but I'm looking forward to just continue watching to get to that point, because I really want to I really want Diego to have that win to know, hey, my dad can be proud of me, you know?
Okay, fair enough.
Any thoughts, Ryan?
He didn't leave much of an impression on me. I just in the little bits that I saw, and I was comparing him to that. I mean, you mentioned how harsh he is in the original book. It's more so. He's basically putting pressure on Diego. Diego has to get married, or he will lose his inheritance, and basically he'll be disowned because of how disgusted Don Alejandro is. That he's just like, I can't believe my son is this weak, this spineless, this. Without saying it, basically kind of effeminate. It's pretty, he's pretty harsh.
He's definitely a softer portrayal. Yeah.
I need to make a correction, and I'm sorry, Shaq, because this kind of nullifies your joke. I was wrong. Bernardo, it was actually this series where they really expanded Bernardo's character and made him the sort of silent partner, sidekick type of character for Zorro to give Zorro somebody to play with. He wasn't in the Tyrone Power one, or he wasn't named Bernardo if they casted somebody else. But yeah, the original Douglas Fairbanks one was more of a faithful adaptation of the original book.
But you're saying he was mentioned in the book, he just didn't have a prominent role.
There's a character named Bernardo, but he's named one time in one chapter. It was really this series that kind of expanded him and made him a character.
Fair enough.
Johnston McCulley was involved early on in the series. I think he died in 1958 while this show was in production, but so he may have even suggested, hey, I've got, they probably wanted a character for him to talk to, so who knows, he might have said, hey, I had one in the in the first story, so why don't we pull that guy. And it's interesting too, that's another connective tissue to the Antonio Banderas movie, because Anthony Hopkins takes the name Bernardo when he acts as Alejandro's assistant once he's mm-hmm. acting like he's
Rich. I didn't pick up on that.
So
when I watched that movie again, there was this weird reversal. I'm like, okay, they're totally flipping and changing all these character names for this new continuity.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So it's like they never mentioned the fact that Alejandro is also the name of Diego's father, but I assume it still is. But anyway, so
why did you have to kill him?
He was a dangerous criminal.
Perhaps it would have been embarrassing to have had him captured and questioned, eh?
It's the Crown of Jewels.
Something wrong?
Oh, no, nothing is wrong. I shall return this to Padre Felipe.
Oh, and you, of course, will explain that it was not Zorro who did this.
Naturally. The people will owe a debt of gratitude to their comandante.
Just one moment. Would you permit me one question? How is it possible for Martinez to have robbed the mission when you already officially buried him?
It was Sergeant Garcia who made out that report. I will see that he is properly disciplined. And now permit me one question. How is it possible that the most inept swordsman in all of California was able to defeat Martinez, one of the best?
Well, perhaps Senor Martinez was right when he said, I am the luckiest swordsman alive.
In the early episodes, in the first 13 episodes, and in the Sign of Zorro movie, which is comprised of what we figured out to be probably about 8 of those first 13, but bits and pieces. The villain is the commandant of the garrison there, of the Quatrell of the Pueblo. That is Captain Montesario, who is played by Britt LeMond. As we said, he was up for Zorro and got the villain instead. But what did you guys think of Captain Montesario?
I thought he's great. Again, this show and Disney knew how to cast these guys because he's got a great look. He's got a great energy. He's villainous, but he's not so repulsive that you hate him. He's somebody who you like to watch him. You like seeing Zorro get the better of him, though. But it's cool. And actually, at the times when he and Diego have to actually work together during this whole little subplot where there's this other criminal posing as Zorro or they robbed him, and Diego has to pretend like he is going to challenge this guy to save Montesario. Those scenes are great, and I thought they had a terrific chemistry between the two of them. So I like that guy as Montesario.
Yeah, he's absolutely great in the role, and in And I now, again, I haven't seen the movies, the two movies leading up to the serials. But for me, at least, this guy really set the template going forward for the, you know, the Commandante, the main big bad, if you will, for all Zorro incarnations to come. Really, he his look, his attitude, his position, you know, whether later on there are alcaldes that create problems for Zorro, whatever. This guy just seems like he is the template for all of it. And the actor, man, those eyes are piercing, man. Like, I would not want him to give me a pissed off stare, because I would just be like, oh, I'd break down crying. He's just so good in the role. And now, as good as he is, unfortunately, with my nostalgia goggles on, for me, the real main bad guy for Zorro is actually Captain Esteban from Zorro the Gay Blade, just because I'd seen it so many times. And Ron Liebman, who later goes on to play on Friends, he plays Rachel's dad. But anyway, in Zorro the Gay Blade, like, I really think he's trying to channel Britt how do you say it? LeMond? Is that how you say it?
I guess. That's how I'm pronouncing it. It might be wrong, but
I think he's really trying to channel a Britt LeMond character version of it. So it's like that ramped up to 11. Maybe that's why I like it. But either way, so yeah, Britt LeMond is great in the role. And I feel like the show loses a little bit when he leaves. I mean, the Eagle storyline later is good, but having Britt LeMond as the main antagonist, he was really, really good. And I feel like having Garcia run the play afterwards, you're kind of missing him.
Yeah, I wonder if they hadn't been better off if they just, you know, they somehow demoted him, but he was still there and he was still kind of in charge. And that way, you know, he might actually have to really team with Zorro. That might have been to fight an actual greater evil. You know, that would have actually been a cool way to go with it. Because I do hate that you lose him, because he's also a very good fencer. You know, he had a fencing background. And so, and if you guys go to YouTube and there's a video of the cast of Zorro at Disneyland, I think it's the, it's the Academy of Film, you know, it's like the Academy Award people, the Oscars, that have it up. And it's this really well done home movie. There's no audio, unfortunately, but you've got Guy Williams and Britt LeMond like sword fighting on top of the Mark Twain riverboat in Disneyland. It's awesome. And, you know, Sergeant Garcia is there. I mean, the whole cast is there. It's really, I mean, who would have loved to have been there to see that? And they're in color too. So you get to see them in color, not colorized, but actual real color. So,
right.
But yeah, I really liked him. And the way they played him, you know, it's a Disney show. So although later villains, the Eagle's pretty damn evil, as I remember, you know, he's pretty wicked. As I recall, it actually gets more intense, in season two at first anyway, but, toward the end of season one, but it's the end of season one. Sorry, it's not season two. I think they did a good job of, like you guys said, make him, you know, you couldn't stand the guy. I mean, his ego was, you know, blown out of proportion, and, you know, he thought he was so charming and handsome, but, you know, the Viceroy's daughter, like, instantly, you know, she's just like, oh God, you know, rolling her eyes at this guy, which I think is hilarious, because he feels like he's got this huge game, you know, and he's like, no, man, she sees right through you, you know. So he's not even as impressive as, you know, to anybody as he thinks he is, which is kind of a nice touch. Usually, you know, the villain, you know, has got it over on somebody. He really doesn't have it over on anybody, honestly, but he's just got enough power to make things miserable for the community. And that's where Zorro comes in. So yeah, he was great villain, and sorry to see him go. But, you know, we talked about, you know, this series just looks great. I mean, you know, apparently had a pretty high budget, you know, for a television show at the time, you know, pretty lavish. And one heck of a set. What do you guys think of, like, the look of the production design of the sets and everything on the show?
Impressive with, you know, and maybe this is a standard typical thing for Westerns, but they had a fairly set number of sets. That's repetitive, but because you've got the Pueblo, you've got the tavern, you've got the hacienda, you don't really need much else. If you need the outside of a building, you just go around and film the other side of the building or whatever. So they made great use of the sets. They were absolutely believable. Like, that is a real town to me. And it's funny to think it's Los Angeles, right? But to me, I can visualize the whole town square. I get it. I know where the jail cells are. It's very believable. I'm totally invested in that town.
Yeah, I mean, it felt lived in and real enough that I kind of forgot it. It faded into the background, but like nothing about it was distracting or seemed cheap or anything like that. Like it, I think it did its job in the sense of it didn't draw attention to itself really in terms of the production, which I think is fine because I was focusing on the characters and the action. So yeah.
Right. Yeah. I think it did a great job of transporting it to that time and that place. And once you, like Shaq said, once you got the lay of the land, you were comfortable there. And, you know, and yeah, they did reuse the same, you know, a lot of the things happened, like you said, at the tavern, inside the Quatrell, at the Diego's Hacienda and stuff. But yeah, it was real impressive. And in fact, that was like the first standing set that was built on Disney's backlot. And it actually stayed there up into the 80s, and that Zorro and Son series was filmed on it as well. And I guess it sucked so bad they just tore it down afterwards. But it's a shame because it's real. I mean, you know, when the shots of him running across the roof, and you know, it looks like an Alex. It's kind of art imitates life, I guess, because it looks like an Alex Toth drawing come to life, you know, in a lot of ways. So.
There is so much rooftop running in this series. I mean, every single, it's like watching Dukes of Hazzard, you know, when they get up on the roofs, it's every episode he is running on the roof. And I'm always impressed, and I can't help but wonder sometimes, is that him or stuntman or whatever? I'm like, very definitely jumping across the Spanish tile roofs. And I'm like, that's a twisted ankle waiting to happen, man. That's impressive.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, it brings us to another thing. The stunts and the fencing on this is, you know, I mean, this show has a lot of action per episode. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I was, you know, coming back watching this for the first time in a few years, I was very impressed.
Yeah, me too. I mean, going back to when you first asked us, like, what are our general impressions? The things that Shaq and I both said were, it's fun, it's adventurous. And I think if the stunts and the action didn't deliver in that, we probably would have given different answers. Because that is a key part of the fun, adventurous spirit of this is the sword fighting looks great. It's fun. It's fast. They make great use of the environment when they're doing their sword fights, whether it's Zorro and this criminal on a cliffside on these rocks, or if it's Diego and Montessario inside this little tavern, you know, breaking the walls and the furniture. They do just great stuff with it. It's fun.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, you said it earlier, Chris, when you said this show holds up, and a lot of it is down to the stunts. Because, I mean, and these aren't just like nostalgia goggles going, yeah, for a 60-year-old show, these stunts look nice. No, these stunts look fine by today. I mean, this isn't Fast and the Furious, sure, but the stunts are still engaging, and they keep you watching, and you want to know what happens next, whether it's the horseback riding or the falls or the jumps. I already mentioned the rooftop running. Ryan, I'm glad you mentioned furniture. I actually have a note here. It says they must have invested a lot of money in breakaway tables, because there's a lot of throwing people on tables that smash apart in the show. But yeah, it all holds up even by today's standards. And some of it's the way the stunts are done, and some of it's the cinematography, and just they filmed it the right way, and they know how to linger the camera in the right places, and it's engaging.
Yeah.
Things as simple as like Bernardo moving a ladder on a bad guy or something. Something as simple as that to deliver like this humorous beat that like changes the whole outcome of the story. That's great.
It was damn funny.
Yeah, that was a good one. Yeah. That poor guy that was impersonating Zorro.
He didn't have a chance.
No. Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah, I know I was watching. I don't know which one I was watching, but I think it might have been one of the last of the hour-long episodes. And there's this scene where it's very simple, but it just looks so cool. He's on the roof. Zorro's on the roof. And he jumps down. It's on a wagon. And the wagon... I don't know what you call it, but the lead of the wagon that connects to the horses is like up in the air because the wagon's tilted back on its back wheel, and Zorro jumps off of the roof onto that and just kind of slow, not super slow, but kind of elegantly descends on that and just comes down right into camera. And it's like, damn, that's cool. You know, it's just,
wow.
Just little things like that. I mean, all the scenes in the tavern. And I think it's funny you guys talk about the breakaway tables because the innkeeper's actually like, please, Commandante, take the fight outside. You know, it's, they're going to have another fight in the tavern, right? So he's going to bust it up. And you know, one thing I thought was really interesting is, the fencing coach on this was Fred Cavins, who instructed Tyrone Power and Douglas Fairbanks on their Zorro film. Oh. So this guy was like in his 70s, I think, by this point, and was still like the lead fencing guy in Hollywood. So they brought him in to, you know, to coordinate all the fights. And I think they said it take like, you know, any fight scene would take like 5 hours to shoot sometimes. And I guess this show for the time, they took a whole week to film an episode, which, you know, back in those days was kind of unheard of. You know, you didn't take a whole week to film a half hour episode, because, you know, they had so much stunt work in it. Yeah. And, you know, fencing is obviously something that's gotta be, done just right. And apparently, you know, the swords all had pointy ends on it, you know, so they were fencing with the actual, I mean, I don't know how sharp they were, but hey, it's still got a point at the end of it. So somebody could, you know, it's definitely got hurt. So yeah, the, you know, a lot of expert craftsmen, went into making this show. And another thing that stands out
before you leave the sword fighting, okay, I got to say,
okay,
no reason for apologies. I'm interrupting you. Okay. Is it ramps up as the series goes along too. I mean, like the sword fights are great right out of the gate, but by the time you watch the very last episode, which Chris hinted at, there's a very special guest star, the sword fighting in that one, it's freaking insane how fast those blades are moving, man. It's like, I'm like, wow. So, I mean, it's the sword fights are really, really intense. It's not like Count Dooku, you know, where it's just like the sword and the light and you can't really see it because, you know, it's just some old guy who can't fight with a sword. But yeah, I mean, it's damned impressive.
Well, that's Christopher Lee, so we'll give him a pass. But yeah,
it's a pass. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, but yeah, you're right. Yeah, it's that episode. We gotta talk about that episode when we get done. And then Ryan, you're gonna have to go watch that episode. But we'll get to it. But you know, another great thing about this that always stood out to me because, and I have the theme for this. I've always had it playing in my head since I was a kid, but it's back now and it won't go away because the theme to Zorro is just, it's so infectious. I mean, it's the composer was a guy named George Bruns, who also composed the Yo-Ho Yo-Ho song for Pirates of the Caribbean, which of course made into the movies. It's on the ride. It's in the movies. You know, Jack Sparrow couldn't get out of his head either. The Ballad of Davy Crockett, all sorts of music for Disney films like 101 Dalmatians and Robin Hood, you mentioned, Ryan. They had lyrics by Norman Foster, but I mean, just that opening, you know, if you guys, you know, it's a little bit different in the Sign of Zorro movie, but you know, the lightning and the makes the Z and Zorro rides up and, you know, rears up on Tornado. And it's just such a great opening theme. I love it. It plays at the beginning of the Sign of Zorro as well.
I love you, Chris, but now the opening credits, the visuals are great, but that Zorro, 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 like the over and over thing, it's like gets under my skin, man. Like,
oh, okay.
I was talking
at the end.
Yeah, I was talking to my wife, and I didn't know she had any history with Zorro. I don't think she even knew she had a history with Zorro. And I mentioned that we're doing the show, and she just starts going, Zorro, Zorro. I'm like, you remember that? She goes, I guess I do. And from my personal love, I keep coming back to Zorro Blade. Sorry, guys. But dun, 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 like, that's Zorro music to me. So, sorry, I'm not on the same page on this one, man.
That's okay. We'll forgive you. And, you know, the Antonio Banderas movie has great music in it, too. That's got a great soundtrack.
It does. We used that in the trailer, by the way.
Yeah, that's good plan. Yeah. Now, the music throughout the series was composed by William Lava, who has got a huge, you know, body of work. He did music for some of the Zorro serials, a lot of the Republic serials. He's probably best known now for doing, like, tons of the Looney Tunes shorts. He composed music for those. But one thing I really liked about this series And it calls back to, you know, as comic nerds, very similar to what Shirley Walker did on Batman the Animated Series. Every episode has its own score, and every character has their own theme that repeats.
Wow.
Which I love. You know, when Bernardo shows up, it plays a da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, that kind of comedy bit. And then Sergeant Garcia's is, you know, it sounds, it's like the whole Peter and the Wolf thing. You know, every character's got their motif. And I don't know. I'm always a sucker for that. John Williams does that in his movies. Danny Elfman does it, you know, like in Batman, whenever, you know, Michael Keaton walked across the screen, you know. So, I mean, I'm just a huge sucker for that. And this is a early example of it. And I just love it. I mean, did the music jump out at you, or am I just a movie music nerd or something?
I'm going to steal a page from Ryan's book and say that, you know, I didn't notice the music, the incidental music, that is. It was obviously effective, but it never was in my face to the point where I noticed it. So it did its job. I'll give it that.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know if you know anything about me and music, but I don't really care for music. I don't listen to it that much. Not my thing. So the opening theme for the movie version did stick in my head, but other than that, yeah, the background music, I can hear it kind of now and think of, like, yeah, there are some like airier notes and more of the comedy beats, and they did it, but I wasn't paying attention to it, and the music didn't draw my attention so much. So, but I mean, I respect the hell out of them if that was their thing, that where every episode got its own dedicated score and they weren't just recycling the same basic tracks. That's pretty good. That's impressive.
Yeah, especially, you know, I mean, you know, we know from animation how easy it is for, I mean, my God, the Filmation cartoons and the Hanna-Barbera cartoons use the same.
Oh, my God. I've been going back to – I just rewatched all of Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, and the sort of party incidental music that they play in every episode, which was also featured in a bunch of episodes of Transformers. That's where I remembered it growing up in the 80s. And I was like, oh, my gosh, this music. And I can't like that. Like, that was the earworm that got stuck in my head for the last month.
I can hear it right now. Da-da-da. Actually, we're going to cover an episode on House of Frankenstein that's got a lot of that music in it. So I'm getting ready to torture myself with that earworm. So, oh my God. Yeah. So we've kind of went over it already, so I'm not going to spend too much time on it, but, we've talked about, we're kind of focusing on the first storyline, the Sign of Zorro, that the Sign of Zorro movie is comprised of. So we'll, you know, briefly run over that, and if you got any additional thoughts on it, we'll go through that. So the Zorro,
one thing we should say about it, and I don't know if we've actually said it yet on the air. I know we've talked about it off air. It's also, the Sign of Zorro is available on Disney Plus right now. Yeah, right. If we said it earlier, I apologize, but I wasn't sure if that was off the air or not.
No, we hadn't said it yet. No, we hadn't. So yeah. So if you The Sign of Zorro is on Disney Plus, and a lot of these episodes, which I was surprised to find out, Shag actually told me, they're on YouTube, which I don't know how they're on YouTube and not pulled off YouTube by Disney or Zorro Productions, but they're out there. So if you guys want to go watch them, yeah, go right ahead, because somebody put them up there.
Well, it's lots of people. Now, sometimes they like crop it weird, and sometimes it's sped up to like maybe 1.2, so the voices are off a little bit, so maybe it doesn't get recognized by some YouTube algorithm or whatever. But pretty much any episode you want to watch, it's out there.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, that's all that. And including now, I will say this just off the bat. I have the DVD sets that Disney Movie Club put out. Heck, it's probably been 10, 15 years ago now. And when they first put them out, they put out colorized versions. And I'm like, oh. But at the time, it was, you know, that was the best that I could, you know, get. So I bought them. And no sooner did I get them, they put out black and white ones. So I gave the got a set of black and white ones and gave them to my dad, who watched the hell out of them. But the only thing is those, we'll get into it, but there's those 4-hour-long episodes are not on those sets. So the only place you can find those, as far as I know, is out on YouTube, and they're all out there. So,
yeah, you ready for some sacrilege?
What's that?
I watched a bunch the other day. The colored version looks better.
No.
I know. I never thought I would say that. You know, like I love respecting something that's original format, but the colors look so damn good. Like I didn't even know it was colorized. It looks so legit. It looks really good.
Which, going back to the episode that we did on the Zorro comics, the Alex Toth comic book adaptations, you said look better in black and white.
This is true. This is all true.
Make up your mind, Shaq. The thing about the color itself doesn't bother me. What bothers me is they filmed a lot of Day for Night, and when they colorized the sky, it's obviously during the day when he's out riding around on the horse out, you know, and the soldiers are chasing him. It's supposed to be night. And look, guys, I'm a Hammer movie fan, and there's a hell of a lot of Day for Night in Hammer movies, but there's just way too much of it in Zorro, and I'm just like, oh, no, it's not supposed to be daytime. It's at night. I just can't stand it. But, yeah, as far as, like, their costumes, and it's not bad. I mean, as colorizations go, it's not bad. I agree. It's not bad, and it's – I wouldn't like refuse to watch it in color. But I do when I watch the show, I desaturate my TV and watch it in black and white.
Well, it's worth it though, just to see Don Diego's like totally boss, crazy colored outfits he's wearing. I mean, they're really, really outstanding with the bright colors he wears.
Yeah. we'll just briefly go over the Sign of Zorro, the movie that's on Disney Plus that comprises the first storyline. It started, the series actually started with an episode called Presenting Senor Zorro, which aired first on October 10th, 1957. And as we said, Diego's called back from Spain by his father, and who, you know, is angry about this Captain Montessario who's, you know, overtaxing the people and is just basically, you know, riding roughshod over everyone. And, you know, Diego fears that his rash actions, you know, might result in reprisals against his father and the other aging rancheros. So, you know, he, like you guys pointed out, that Bernardo, he has Bernardo toss all his fencing trophies out of the boat that they're, you know, traveling on from Spain. And he comes into town as this, you know, man of letters, as he puts it. His father's, you know, pretty well disgusted. And it basically revolves around a friend of theirs, Don Nacho Torres, who has spoken out against Montessario and has been arrested. Zorro frees him in his first act. And in the TV version, he sends him to a mission where he can request sanctuary. And in the Sign of Zorro truncated version, he sends him straight to the governor with some loop dialogue to change to change it. But basically, that's the first storyline. It's a back and forth that, you know, when Montessario can't get Nacho back, that he arrests his wife and daughter, and then they're in prison, and, you know, everybody's up in arms about that, and that's how Alejandro gets injured, because the against Diego's wishes, the rancheros all decide to basically storm the Quatrell, and Alejandro gets injured, and then him and Nacho were put on trial, and there's this lawyer, and I can't think of that guy. I meant to look up that actor's name, but that guy that played Montessario's lawyer partner, he freaked me out with his crazy raised eyebrow.
he's pretty crazy looking. You're not wrong.
I mean, it's like if Leonard Nimoy got stuck in his, you know, Spock raised eyebrow mode and couldn't get it back down. If the guy, poor guy, had some kind of facial injury, and I apologize, and I'm not trying to be insensitive, but I kept wondering, it's like, is it stuck that way, really? Can he not, like, fix that? Because every scene he's in, and he's a big worrywart, too, so it actually works, because he's, like, fretting over the whole Montessario's plans, basically just to, you know, have all these guys arrested and just take their land is basically what his ultimate plan is. And, you know, he's just, you know, basically trying to get the Dons off the land and claim it and have as much power as possible, which, you know, typical. But, you know, the Zorro manages to stop their plan of convicting Nacho and his father because the shady lawyer guy is filling in for the judge. And Zorro has a sword at his back, so he has to declare him not guilty, which I think is a nice bit. And then we get into that great end storyline where there's a Zorro imposter, which we mentioned. And at the end, you know, Captain Montessario is arrested by the Viceroy, and he's taken off, and Sergeant Garcia becomes commandant of the Pueblo until the next guy comes in, which I don't know if they're ever, well, I watch the next episode and somebody comes in, but they don't stay long. That's all I'll say. So you guys got any like overall thoughts, anything we didn't mention about this first storyline or the Sign of Zorro movie that you wanted to get off your chest?
Well, I got to share real quick to answer your question about the lawyer. Okay. So the lawyer, the actor, the character's name, Lucian, doesn't matter. His last name is Pina. Is what they always call Pina. Him Pina.
Yeah.
And when you look him up on IMDb, it's Than Wyen is the guy's name. It's Than Wyen. The only photo of him out there, he's got the crazy eyebrow. The eyebrow's like cranked way up. Like it's almost like stretched up. It's crazy. And this guy appeared in everything we love. T.J. Hooker, Simon and Simon, Knight Rider, Newhart, Quincy, Remington Steele. Oh, my God. $6 million man. The guy's been in everything. Anyway. Ryan, why don't you go ahead and go first? I'm sorry. I just had to jump in there with that.
So when I watched this, I didn't have any context for it. I didn't really know much about like the story or any of the background. Basically, everything that we've been talking about for the last hour, I didn't have any of that information. We were just talking about, hey, let's do a Zorro month thing. And I was like, all right, let me watch this. So I watched the Sign of Zorro movie on Disney Plus in two sittings, split up over 2 days. And didn't really think about it at the time, but about a day later, I was like, that's a very weirdly structured movie. it feels like there's like 6 or 7 little vignettes that are just like, what is the through line? Like, what is the main plot, like storyline? Like, said, like characters just come and go, they disappear. I was like, there's no like romantic love interest subplot or anything like that. There's like no like support character. And I'm like, and at the very end of it, I was like, there isn't a final battle between Zorro and Montessario. It's between Montessario and Diego out of costume and everything like that. And he basically just kind of like fools Montessario into like, he fools the town into like convicting Montessario and having him taken away. I was like, so he kind of wins by God, but it's like, you don't get your like last heroic like Zorro moment of like triumph where he does all this thing. I was like, this is just kind of like a weird movie. And then when you guys were discussing, I was like, it was a TV show, and they basically just chopped the TV show and put it in the movie. I'm like, that makes a whole lot of sense. I was like, that kind of explains everything. And so I watched it again a second time before this one. I was like, yes, now I see. This is a completely different episode. That's why. Yeah. So. Yeah, without the context, like if I didn't know any of this information, all the stuff that we've been talking about, if you just watch the movie again, it's fun, and it goes from tiny little adventure to tiny little adventure to tiny, which helps carry through and makes it so fun and lighthearted, and it's like, yeah, this is a fun little thing to watch. But it also means you can watch this in three different chunks, like a week apart, and you're not really missing anything. It's like, oh yeah, you just jump right back in. So. It's kind of fun for just a very casual viewing. But like if you don't have that context, but if you do, then it's like, oh, okay. Now everything that I was kind of like, well, why did they do that? Now I understand that because I have the context.
Well, I can't judge it independently as a film because I went in knowing that it was episodes cut together. I didn't realize it was from 8 episodes. It felt like to me I was just watching 4 episodes strung together back to back. But so for me, I just, you know, again, knowing their episodes, I felt like it was a lot of fun. You know, I felt like I was getting the full Montessario arc. Now, I knew from reading some again of the Alex Toth comics that I was missing some episodes in there and like the whole thing with the mission and all that jazz. But no, I felt it held up. It gave me everything I needed to know. Like it makes a great primer for someone that's not really familiar with Zorro to kind of learn about the whole thing. And the thing that probably surprised me the most, and Chris, you mentioned this sort of in the introduction about how serialized the show was. Like for a show that's probably targeted at like, I don't know, 8-year-old boys, which really if you put the three of us together, that's about where our intellect ends. It's kind of surprising how much they expect a kid to remember from week to week. because they do introduce a concept, and then the next week, or there might be a whole new story, but it's all based on one thing that happened in the last episode, or someone came into town, or someone did something, and it's just like, wow. I mean, you really got to be paying attention when you watch the show.
Yeah, I mean, the last episode that they filmed, which is one we've been teasing about, that one is calls back to the very first episode, because it all hinges on the fact that Diego was a fencing champion in Spain.
Yeah, good point.
And that's something that could have definitely just been forgotten, you know, at some point, you know, because nobody else was in Spain in the town, so they didn't have any idea that he was actually an expert fencer. So, that's one of the things that really carried this series. I mean, I think that's one thing that really put it over for me as a kid. Is this like, you know, I felt like I was, you know, like the show trusted me to, that I was smart enough to keep up with it. You know, I mean, it wasn't dumbing itself down for me, you know, so to be easily digested, you know, it mm-hmm. appealed to me. But it also, you know, it expected me to pay attention, which I think it's like, okay, it's respecting its audience of kids even, you know. And one thing I thought, you know, was interesting is, I mean, this isn't overly violent, you know, or anything like that. But I mean, you know, there is some, you know, I mean, his father gets shot. You do see some blood, and I mean, there's quite a bit of blood on his chest, and I mean, you know, people get injured, you know, obviously sometimes people don't get injured. All the guards that get knocked downstairs and things like that, they get up and they run off. But you know, I mean, there are consequences for the acts and that happen, and I, you know, I watched the first 13 episodes themselves, and then went back and watched The Sign of Zorro, so I could like kind of see what they did. And I think they did film a couple of little quick scenes to kind of basically, you know, shift the story, like switch the track, basically. You know, you know, like there was one particular scene where, you know, when Alejandro's like, Zorro takes him back to his hidden cave, which we never got into the whole hidden, the secret entrances into his hidden cave and stuff, which of course, you know, Batman ripped off. But I really liked, some of the secret passageway stuff they had in it. But, you know, there's this whole part where Alejandro is injured in the cave and Zorro comes up into the house. And in the episode, he has to deal with, Montesario and Garcia and the soldiers showing up looking for, Alejandro at their house. But in The Sign of Zorro, that never happens. So, you know, he just comes up and says, you know, my father's, you know, down in the, you know, is in the cave. I'm going to, you know, ride out and try to, you know, steer the soldiers away from here. So that, you know, they filmed that scene to switch that. So there were little things like that. And like we were saying before we started recording, there's this whole, fun bit with the Ghost of the Mission that you said is actually adapted into one of the comics, Shag. It's like, I think episode 4, where, Diego tells, Garcia about this ghost story about this mad monk. And who looks a lot like PJ Frightful. And so I looked up that episode aired on Halloween Day of 1957. So that was cute. So that's for Halloween episode. So yeah, if you guys want to watch a fun episode, go watch episode 4 of Zorro. But yeah, so I thought, you know, it is kind of strange, Ryan's right. You don't get that last like battle between Montesario and Zorro, but it is, you know, I think like it's like a Zorro buffet. You know, it's like, I wouldn't recommend going to a buffet right now, people. I just would say that. Buffets, what's that? They're gone, right? You know, it's like a sampler, you know, it's like a Whitman sampler box of Zorro, you know, basically. I think it's a little odd to a point, but I think they do a pretty good job, all things considered. They took 13 episodes. And it took 8 of about those 13 and took parts from it and made a, what is it, like an hour and a half movie?
I was just going to say, yeah. I mean, look, folks, it's like 90 minutes of your day and it's super fun and you're going to love it if you haven't seen it. So check it out. It's Disney Plus. You probably have it already anyway.
Right. And they did a second movie that's not on Disney Plus called Zorro the Avenger. And I'm pretty sure that ends when Samuel L. Jackson comes and recruits him. But he was the first Avenger, apparently.
And Garcia snaps his fingers.
You think? But yeah, so and that apparently encapsulates the Eagle storyline, which that's the next big storyline. That's the power vacuum left by Montessario sets up an even worse villain. And I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure at the end of the Eagle storyline, Zorro actually kills that guy. I think he runs him through. I think he has to. I think he ends up stabbing him with the sword. So I could be wrong. And if you guys know, tell me. I haven't watched that episode yet. I'm going to make my way through because now I'm hooked. I'm hooked again.
I've only seen, I think, one or two of the Eagle episodes, and I've read a few of the comics. I have not seen the conclusion of it. But they are pretty dark. I mean, they're compelling. The ones I've done, especially again, the comics, love them. The comic stories were, you know, it was the comic story that we covered on the comic book episode was all about basically rescuing all of California because the Eagle was going to take over the entire region of California, and they Zorro saved the day, saved the whole state. Well, I guess it wasn't a state at that point, but you know what I mean.
Yeah,
and yeah, I mean, it was intense.
I remember that one like it being. Like a little more intense. In the first episode I watched, which was episode 14, I mean, there's a straight up an assassination in that episode. So it's like, wow, okay. So we're definitely not, you know, we're definitely not dumbing things down for 8-year olds, I guess, at this point. But they weren't all that dark. But it can get that way, which I think is kind of cool.
So I got a question for you. Since you watched the first 13, right? Yeah. And I've only watched of those, really, for the most part, The Sign of Zorro.
Okay.
When does the whip come in? Because unless I'm mistaken, we didn't see the whip once in Sign of Zorro. But yet, later in season two and in the movies, or the one-hour specials, he's got the whip. So when did that – what happened there?
You know, I don't know. I was the same – I was kind of wondering that myself. I don't know when he started using the whip, and I don't know when his father found out he was Zorro. So that's something I'm going to have to, check out as I go through this. I mean, I could probably look it up, but I want to have fun with it. So I want to discover it on my own, I guess, again. But yeah, that's, you know, cause this, the whip is definitely something that, I have a book called The Legend of Zorro, and it covers all the history of Zorro up through the 1990s, Family Channel series. And, there's actually a promotional book in there. They reprint from the sequel to Fairbanks Zorro, which is called Don Q, Son of Zorro. And, it actually encourages people to, this is how early this is, guys. This is like 1921 or 22. It's like special promotional, you know, campaign, you know, work with your local leather maker to, promote the sales of whips because of, Zorro using a whip.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Which I think is hilarious because, you know, by the time this show come on, there was a full-blown Zorro merchandising blitz. I mean, there were, you know, Marx figurines and play sets and, you know, I've got a plastic Zorro figure of that says, you know, Walt Disney Productions on it, this little black Zorro on a tornado. And there's the costumes and Ben Cooper costumes and sword sets and paper dolls and all this stuff. So, I mean, this thing was huge, you know, so... It really took off, and it attracted a lot of famous people. It had a lot of famous guest stars or guest stars that would go on to be famous. Just running down through a list of these real quick. You had guys like Richard Anderson from $6 Million Man, Annette Funicello. I know she was on one you watched, Shag.
Yeah, we got to talk about that.
Okay, well we'll let you talk about that. We'll go ahead and talk about it. What about Annette Funicello? Go ahead.
All right, so. That's a good example. It's the 1-hour movies after season two ends. It's a lot of the wink and a nod kind of lighter fare stuff. But I don't get America's fascination with her. I'm sorry. She's not a very good actress. She's not a very good singer. Other than two particular attributes, I'm not exactly sure why everyone was crazy about her. Like, it was actually genuinely sort of grating to watch her in the Zorro episode. Everyone was just so in awe of her, and I just wanted them to, like, I'm like, everyone else in this cast is so much better than her. So, sorry, I just really stuck in my craw.
It was the Skippy peanut butter. That's all I know, you know, because she used to pitch Skippy peanut butter. That's all.
I guess. I don't know. Like I said, there's two particular attributes people watch her for, apparently. So.
apparently, whatever reason, Walt Disney thought she was the, you know, It was her and then later Kurt Russell, because we all know that the last thing Walt Disney wrote on a piece of paper was Kurt Russell before he died. So I'm just saying. I don't
was
know.
Was he naming his murderer?
Yes, yes. 10-year-old Kurt Russell killed Walt Disney. Yeah, there you go.
It was the tennis shoes that did it.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, Annette Funicello was on several episodes. Western regular Jack Elam with his bug eyes. Williams' future Lost in Space co-star Jonathan Harris was on one. I watched one that had Lee Van Cleef playing a bandit. Imagine that. The innkeeper that we talked about is actually, for Universal Monster fans, he is the captain of the boat in Creature from the Black Lagoon, so Nestor Pavia. I recognized him. Rita Moreno was on some of the one-hour episodes. Sebastian Cabot from Family Affair was actually the judge who was supposed to be there in the episode. There's a whole big him and Garcia getting an eating contest, which is kind of funny.
That would be awesome, actually.
Robert Vaughn, the man from Uncle and from Superman 3, was there. Dan Blocker from Bonanza was there, and actually Guy Williams was on Bonanza for a brief period of time when Pernell Roberts was like planning on, he kept saying he was going to leave, and so they brought Guy Williams in after Zorro to replace him as a cousin of the Cartwrights, and then Pernell Roberts decided to stay, at least for the rest of the season, and they sent Guy Williams away. And then Pernell Roberts left. So what do you know? What are you going to do about it?
The infamous cousin, replacement cousin syndrome. Yeah,
exactly. He deserves much better than Beer. He's no Coy or Vance, you know, cousin Oliver. Right. So,
right.
So another series of guests that we know well, Cesar Romero appeared Woo-hoo. In later episodes as Diego's ne'er-do-well uncle, and another Batman cast member, Neil Hamilton, who played Commissioner Gordon, appeared on the show. Ross Martin from The Wild Wild West was on an episode in the final episode of Zorro. Who was
here? We go.
Who
here
was
we go.
It was a villain, Shag.
Yes. Can I say it?
Yeah.
Corinthian leather, Ricardo Montalban, and he's freaking brilliant in this thing, man. He's so good.
No, no, no! I locked the door myself. The window is barred. He could not possibly escape.
Go ahead, Sergeant. Open the door. Diego de la Vega is not there. He is Zorro. We win the bet.
The money will do you no good in prison, Señor Castillo.
No, but it will be most comforting.
You can't send us to prison for taking our own money. And we won it fair and square.
Yeah, yes.
Oh, man. He's so, so, so good in this thing.
That episode went to a place, I don't want to spoil it for anybody, because there's something that happens in that episode that I've never seen a superhero character ever do. And that Diego does in that episode. And I'm like, holy crap, I can't believe he did that. And the fact that the show went there. So
wait, are we including the Batman Damned graphic novel?
No, we're not including that. Okay, yeah. No, we're not talking about Bruce Wayne here. No.
There it is.
But yeah, he did. Yeah, there's something. Yeah, did definitely. So that's, I think that's called Old Acquaintance.
Yes.
So yeah, if you go look up that 1 hour episode, that I definitely, me and Shaq both highly recommend that one. It's a great one. If it had to be the last one, it's a good one to go out on. So,
and that's the one I was hinting at earlier about the sword fighting being ramped up. Holy crap! The sword fight between Guy Williams and Ricardo Montalban is just, I mean, the blades are like, they're moving like lightning. They're going so quick, man. It's so good. Oh, and as much as I like him as Khan, I like him better in this. I mean, like young Khan, that is. I mean, there's no beating Wrath of Khan, but young Khan versus like this portrayal, I don't know. It just feels more organic. Ricardo Montalban's more believable in this role, and he's good, and his ego gets the better of him. Oh, I love it. And one of the fun things about these 1 hour movies, if you watch them out on YouTube, is it actually, they were like a part of the Walt Disney, what do they call that?
Disney Presents or yeah, Wonderful yeah. World of Disney would yeah later be called Disneyland. It had like four or five different names. So, yeah. The anthology show. Yeah.
They're all introduced by Walt himself.
Yeah.
Like Walt has a little, I don't know, two or three little minute bit. We're talking about, you know, this is what a dowry is, or this is, you know, what old California was like when it was under Spanish control, things like that. So that's kind of fun.
Yeah, and in fact, the weird thing with this series was it was hugely popular, very successful in the ratings, had a huge marketing campaign behind it. But it only lasted two seasons because Walt Disney wanted to go color for season three. And ABC, the channel, the station network it was on, did not have any color shows and was not interested in going color. And apparently, you know, they would have had to foot some of the bill. And so Walt got in a dispute with them over that. And they basically didn't make any more episodes of Zorro. And he kept the cast on the salary for the next 2 years. And they made 4 one-hour movies that were apparently cobbled together from scripts they had written. Put together from scripts they had written for a third season. So instead of getting, you know, two episodes, you get 1 hour-long episode. And they were on, like you said, Wonderful World of Disney, Walt Disney Presents, are still in black and white because that was still on ABC and in black and white, which I think is funny because now Disney owns ABC. And Walt tell them, I want color, damn it, I own you, you know. So that's why there's only like, you know, 78 standard episodes and then 82 if you count the hour-long ones, which is a real shame. I do think though this show, we talked about, Guy Williams went on to do Lost in Space and some of the other actors went on to do other Disney projects. I don't know. What do you guys think, you know, from what you've watched to this and what you know of Zorro, what do you think what's the lasting legacy, the impact of this show that you've seen?
I don't know. It's hard for me to say, having not grown up with this and not really for experiencing this decades after the fact, relatively recently. It's hard for me to kind of put that in the context and imagine what this did for the Zorro franchise and kept it alive and kept it in the consciousness. But what I would say, you know, on a personal level, getting back to something I said earlier, you know, it kills me that, you know, I didn't grow up watching a Zorro animated Disney movie like I did with like Robin Hood and some of those other, you know, classic movies that I loved when I was a kid. And if I'd been able to see an animated Zorro movie like that in that style with a fox as, you know, an anthropomorphic fox as Zorro or something along those lines. But without that, I mean, now being a father with a kid, like I think because these movies and these episodes are 1950s and 60s Disney, they're very family friendly. They're very accessible. I can show these to my kid when he's a little bit older. Like if I want to get Reese into Zorro, I can show him this movie and these things and just kind of – you described the movie Sign of Zorro as a sort of Whitman sampler of giving you lots of little vignettes, lots of little brief little storylines of what a Zorro adventure might be like. And you can get those in like little 15-minute chunks and spread it out and like separate it or the whole episodes or something like that. But that could be a kid today's inroad into Zorro, and again you can find these online. So I think something like that these are still accessible, that these are still something that a kid could watch because they're fun, they're funny, they're adventurous, they're swords. I mean, you know, whether it's in black and white or color, either way, I think it's just, yeah, it's a fun little thing that I think a lot of people would still enjoy. I mean, to cap the point that I was just trying to make, and it took me a while to get there, as Shag actually put it, it still holds up.
Yeah.
There you go. As far as legacy goes, if you look a little bit in the direct line of legacy, interestingly enough, the things that are unique to the Disney show would be like Montessorio and Garcia. Those were original creations for this show. Those same characters appear like in the Topps comic book for Zorro, but Disney has nothing to do with that production. I don't even know how Topps did that unless those characters go with the Zorro license. Mm-hmm. But they specifically chose to do that. If you look at the 1997 animated series New Adventures of Zorro, again, now they changed the name a tiny bit. Instead of Montessorio, it's Montessero, but there's Montessero and there's Garcia, so they keep it going. Again, there's a new like computer animated one in France, I want to say it is. It's again same thing, same character. So you have the direct legacy of those characters are still around, and those are, I think, honestly, those are the templates for Zorro bad guys. Though, you know, I mentioned a few times now Zorro the Gay Blade. And Esteban, without a doubt, is just modeled on Montessorio. So I think you get the modeling of those characters. And the other legacy is truly, even though I know the Antonio Banderas movie did very, very well, and again, Catherine Zeta-Jones is a force not to be ignored. I think when people think of Zorro, I think they think of this series. I think this is the most widely recognized version of Zorro. Maybe I'm kidding myself. I don't know. But it seems like this is the version people think of.
Yeah, the characters of Montessorio and Garcia are pretty much modeled off of characters from the original Johnston McCulley book, but they have different names. In the book, it's Captain Ramon and Sergeant Gonzalez.
Interesting.
But they act and function in pretty much the same type of way. So it's interesting. But like even in the Tyrone Power movie, I think it was Captain Pascal and maybe Sergeant Garcia or Gonzalez. I don't remember. But so the characters' names have been changed, but they've always been kind of the same type of character and do the same type of thing. So maybe that's how Topps is able to use them, because essentially it's the same character just by a different name. But I don't know.
Yeah.
There was a series on the Family Channel. It aired on the channel that eventually became, I think it started out as Christian Broadcasting Network, became Family Channel, became ABC Family, and then now it's Freeform. But they had a Zorro series. It was filmed in Spain. It lasted for two or three seasons. And Duncan Rager, people might know him as Dracula from the Monster Squad. And he was also the ghost that Crusher got it on with in that TNG episode.
Oh, jeez.
He was Zorro. I liked him as Zorro. I watched the show. I tried to get into it, but there was something, I don't know, it was just, there was that spark, that wink, that feeling of fun was missing from it. And I don't know. It's like the pacing was sluggish. They had almost everything that this show had, but that X factor, whatever this show had, that charm this show had, was just lacking in that later show. And I can't explain it. Ephraim Zimbalist Jr., voiced Alfred, of course, to us on Batman Animated Series. He played Don Alejandro in the first season, and then Henry Darrow, who played in that horrible Don't Look It Up Zorro and Son show, he played Zorro, Diego. He played Alejandro in the later seasons of this Duncan Rager series. But for whatever reason, they did not capture that lightning in the bottle. And to me, that goes to prove just how there was this some special. Maybe it's that Disney quality. Maybe it's just the hands of Walt Disney. I mean, Walt Disney was involved in this show. You know, he was personally involved in it. I mean, obviously, Walt Disney was able to create a lot of stuff that obviously still holds up well today. And maybe that's what it was. But,
Is the Guy Williams hotness was missing.
The Guy Williams hotness was missing. Although, you know, Duncan Rager's not a bad looking guy. So, I mean, you know, I don't know. But,
okay.
Yeah, but. But no, it's there's just something about it. And I think you're right, Jack. I think at least up until a certain period, this was the Zorro. I mean, I think maybe because it's been out of circulation a little bit. I think the Disney Channel finally stopped playing it sometime around the mid-90s, probably when they started producing a lot of their own sitcoms and things like that. And, you know, they quit showing a lot of the old Disney stuff.
Damn you, Hannah Montana.
Yes, and freaking, what was the other
Wizards
one?
Wizards of Waverly Place.
Wizards of Waverly Place. The one with Hilary Duff. What was the one with that one? Oh, shit. I can't think of that
one. I don't even know.
I don't know, but anyway. But anyway, but yeah, that, you know, all those shows, even Stevens with freaking Shia LaBeouf, you know, so, but, yeah, you know, I think, you know, hopefully, what I'm hoping, I would love to see Disney actually put the series and the 1 hour specials on Disney Plus. I mean, yeah, you can go to YouTube, but if they were all there, it'd be easier to watch them and to watch through the whole series. I'd love to see them add it on there. And, you know, so kids like Reese and other kids can watch. I mean, my kids watch these growing up because I get the DVDs out and watch them with them. But, they're a great, like you said, Ryan, they're a great introduction to the character. You know, and it's just got this, just that fun sense of adventure, but there is also a component of, you know, it's the hero fighting for the oppressed. He's the he's the one percenter who cares, you know. who gets, you know, he goes out at night and fights for those who are oppressed, and so that's, you know, that's a good thing. And that's obviously, guys, that's a timeless theme, right? So we can all agree that that's a timeless theme. So,
yep. Yeah. We can use someone like him right now.
Yeah, we could sure use a Zorro right now. Where are you, Guy? Where are you, Guy Williams?
That's actually something that Max and I were talking about back on the Mirror Factory. I brought it back to there was an interview that Matt Wagner, who wrote the comic book Zorro Year One, he was doing, I think it was a podcast episode with John Suntress on Word Balloon. And he was, and this was like 10, 12 years ago, but he was saying a lot of these characters that came out of the pulps, these traditions, characters like Zorro or even like Sherlock Holmes, he was like, these characters kind of belong in the era in which they were created. And if you take them too far away from that era, they lose this essential quality and you can't really tell those stories. Well, the BBC Sherlock Holmes show with Benedict Cumberbatch and Martin Freeman kind of proved that wrong, that you can age that character into the modern day and do it successfully. And I definitely think, like, with what's going on along the U.S.'s southern border right now, and I think there is definitely room for a social justice activist Zorro type of character that you could set him in a modern day in a TV show or a movie.
Yeah,
I think gotta figure out a way to do it without guns, because that just kind of changes the whole feel. There's something elegant about swordplay.
Agree.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, although I did notice in some of the later episodes, Zorro does use a flintlock pistol. So, you know,
he does in the original show. He has a gun, but he usually uses it to basically keep people at bay while he sword fight. He will sword fight with one hand against like Garcia or Ramon or something, while he's got a gun trained on the rest of the guards so they don't surround him. So
that makes sense. That makes perfect sense. Well, guys, I guess this episode's going to wrap up Zorro month, because it's literally coming out on the last day of the month. So, so thanks to everyone who followed Zorro month. And, we want to give a special thanks to our patron, Adam Ackerman, who kickstarted this idea by suggesting, some coverage of the Mark of Zorro, over on Film and Water, and that kind of got everybody thinking, hey, we should do a Zorro month, and it's been long percolating, but here we are. It's the 101 at first anniversary. We missed the 100th, but we got the 101st anniversary of the first appearance of Zorro. So yeah, we got that in there, guys. So before we sign off, Shag and Ryan, where can folks find you on the interwebs, Ryan?
I host JLI Bwahaha Cast. I host Fire and Water, the Aquaman and Firestorm shows. Pretty much every Sunday you can hear me on one of the episodes.
And then for me, you can find me ending pretty much each one of my shows in succession. I killed off Secret Origins, Batman, Nightcast is just barely on its 2 feet. I've tried to kill it a couple times, but Chris keeps making me cover other stuff. I'm still kind of doing Cheers Cast for now, and I'm thinking about whether Midnight should hang around. And I do the records thing, but really it's just to get my brother off my back. And then someday I'm going to do FW Sports, but I'm kind of lazy. So.
For myself, I do a French language podcast that's not on our network. You guys may not have heard it, but it's not on the network, but you can go try to find it. But no. Thanks, everyone.
We've been doing this way too long.
We have. Yeah. thanks to everyone for listening. We mentioned Patreon. If you want to help support the Fire and Water Network through Patreon, you can go to patreon.com/FW podcast and find all sorts of ways to help keep the shows going and the network going. And we appreciate all that. And thanks, Ryan and Shaq, for joining me. And I'm going to jump off here and go pull my DVDs out and go watch me some more Zorro. So until then, may your pants always be free of the letter Z. Buenos dias.
Vaya con Dios.
Adios, amigos.
Zorro's a mythical character. He's something of our imagination. Uh-huh. What's that?
That's your imagination.
Señores y señoritas.
Zorro!
At your service. As you say, perhaps I am only a part of the imagination. I remember that's what they said about me in California. Some would smile and say, Zorro, poof, he's a ghost, a dream, a myth, something of the imagination.
Look out! Watch out, Zorro!
see, my friends, it is entirely a matter of opinion. This is a personal thing between you and me. Whether I am real or not is for you to decide. Each of you in your own mind and heart. Meantime, till we meet again.